Greetings and welcome to the AVOD. I'm Count Vargelon.
I am the Dive Mistress.
And tonight we're going to be talking about the thing that everybody's talking about. That's right, the Tiger Woods scandal.
Oh no. This is what you wouldn't tell me about before we started recording?
No, not at all. I don't want to talk about the Tiger Woods scandal. but I swear to God, I cannot turn on any episode of any TV show without hearing about Tiger Woods. And I'm like, I didn't care about golf before he was screwing around on his wife. I don't care about it now. You know? Like, this isn't going to make me interested if that's your plan, world. Like, you haven't made golf sexy. He's still just a golfer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I mean, yeah, he's a golfer who apparently just loves cheating on his wife and does it all the time.
Well, but he probably just shouldn't have gotten married if that's the case.
It is the case. But, you know what? We're here to not talk about this. So let's start not talking about this. Actually, before we get to the show proper, I have, like, three things I want to discuss. So can we get them out of the way quickly?
All right. Well, okay. That's really up to you.
It is. It will not be quickly. Just a warning. Unrelated item number one. Microsoft has excellent customer service.
Really?
So, I'm sure that many of the person listening to this has heard stories about the fact that Xbox 360s die all the time. Now, I amazingly bought an Xbox 360 just a year after they started making them, and mine had never died. Oh, the disk drive sounded like it was made of gravel when I played a disc, and it would only work when standing up. But it hadn't died until yesterday. And you'd think, hey, he's had it for 3 years. He's probably going to have to buy a new one. Apparently not, because I called them up, and they're like, no, it's been, you were part of the original batch of buyers, so we gave you an extended 3-year warranty. And you still have 20 days left on it, so we're just giving you a new system.
Wow!
I know, right?
That's amazing!
Now, apparently it's technically not a new system. They take mine, they fix the hell out of mine, and then they give it to someone else 6 months later. So I'll be getting one that was fixed the hell out of 6 months, like starting 6 months ago.
A refurbished.
Exactly. But the point is, yeah. I'm sending them a broken system for no cost, and they're mailing me back a fixed system for no cost.
Yeah, so that's awesome.
I think that's pretty awesome. And again, I bought this almost 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So, and I know that, like, they only have this good service because they've had to, because it was a, you know, disastrous failure of production.
Oh, no.
Yeah, apparently they have a ridiculous failure rate. But the point is, Microsoft has excellent customer service. Okay, that's point one. Point two, I've watched almost all of Being Erica, the show that's and I'm not going to get into why, but for a reason that I'm not going to get into, it was suggested that I should watch all of Being Erica.
I've actually heard that it's supposed to be pretty good. So.
It's an okay show, but what I didn't know, here's the weird thing about it. Did you watch Wonderfalls?
No, you know that I didn't.
Yeah, I know, it's sad. It's a great show, but here's the weird part. This show is basically a mishmash of Wonderfalls and Peggy Sue Got Married, because A, Wonderfalls, the girl who's an underachiever and trying to fix her life and messed up love life and family who's persecuting her and blah, 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 right? A, and then B, like Peggy Sue Got Married, she can go back to an earlier time in her life and change things. So it's halfway between those two things. And it's also more Peggy Sue Got Married because it's magic going back in time and not science going back in time. But anyway, I didn't know either of those things going in. I just knew it was something about a woman and her life and maybe time travel. But the Wonderfall things was the weirdest thing because her love interest in the show is the guy who played the same part on Wonderfalls. So the people at the CBC are like, well, we're ripping up Wonderfalls. Who are we going to get to be the love interest? Who played that exact same part on that show? Oh, we got him. Oh, okay.
Poor guy. If he was, yeah, like, hoping to maybe break out of that role,
I know.
He can't.
Although, to be fair, it is work. You know, work is work is work. So I think maybe he's okay with this. I would like to ask Tyron Lightso. I don't know how to pronounce his name. Because what it comes down to is, Tyron, you were the star of House of the Dead. And he wasn't the main character in House of the Dead. He was the one who was a male model with a fake British accent.
Like, I remember anything about House of the Dead.
I know you don't, but, you know, again, our viewer might. He was that one, and then he was in one, and I'm like, he, like everyone else, did not impress me in the film House of the Dead. But he would then be, he would go on to be on Wonderfalls, and that was a wonderful show, and now he's playing the exact same character here. And I guess since he was good on Wonderfalls, he's just sticking to what he's good at. And for that, I say, more power to you, and I just wanted to say his name a second time, Tyron Lightso.
Okay.
Oh, and I got a question for you. When you have time travel things, how do you feel about stories where you can change your own past? Do you think you should be able to remember the new history or shouldn't?
Well, it might depend on why you're going back to begin with. If you're going back to change something that you don't want to remember.
Right. No, I mean, I don't think, I'm just saying, do you think it's more, and this is going to sound weird, realistic if you remember it, or more realistic if you don't?
I would argue that it's probably more realistic if you do remember it.
Okay, the new history.
Okay. Yeah.
See, weirdly, I've always liked, and I can't believe I'm going to call it this, Time Cop style. That that because you were in the past while history was being changed, you do not remember the new history. Because I think it's funny, the idea of someone going back and having to relearn all that, all their, you know, their life now.
I just think that's kind of tedious.
Yeah, I guess it is extremely tedious, but, you know, I'm just saying I also enjoy it.
And I believe that our brains are probably capable of handling that much in, like, the, I guess, the
new information.
It's almost like a paradox, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Being able to contain that information at once.
Okay, so you're on camp, you should be able to remember both histories.
Yes.
Okay. But you do think that you should be able to remember both histories. Like, none of that crap where you forget the original version, right?
No, I think you would remember both.
Okay, yeah, because I've always
hated. Because you experienced both.
That's what I'm getting at. Okay.
Yeah.
Hmm. I guess people would make the argument that you didn't actually experience, you know, like your consciousness didn't experience the second one. But now we're getting into heady time travel stuff, which is not what we're here to do.
Instead, not at all.
We're here to talk about Rocket Robin Hood.
That is also not what we're here to do.
I was talking with Merman on the weekend, and I found out I realized the most amazing thing while I was talking to him, and so I wanted to get your thoughts on this. Because we were talking about, weirdly, as we are wont to do, the movie Flash Gordon. Because that's a great movie. But anyway, we were talking about Space Robin Hood in that. And he pointed out that, you know, that Space Robin Hood is in the original comic strip. And so here's the interesting story, all right? So in the late 20s, early 30s, they start doing a Flash Gordon comic strip, right? About a guy's adventures in the future or in space or whatever. And then in 1938, Errol Flynn stars in The Adventures of Robin Hood, and it's a giant action hit. So the people making the Flash Gordon comic strip say, oh, well, we can't, you know, let's rip this off because you can't copyright Robin Hood. So let's add a character who's just Robin Hood and draw him to look like
Errol Flynn.
Exactly. So Space Robin Hood is born. Fast forward to the 1960s. A cartoon company says, wait a minute, you can't copyright the concept of Space Robin Hood. It can't be done. So Rocket Robin Hood is born, one of the worst cartoons of the 1960s, but something I'm personally obsessed with, as I'm sure you know. But here's where it gets interesting. In the late 70s, because of the success of Star Wars, they make a Flash Gordon movie, which includes the character Space Robin Hood, played by Timothy Dalton.
Okay.
Then, 15 years later, they would make the movie The Rocketeer comes out. It is set during the production of fake The Adventures of Robin Hood, and Timothy Dalton is playing fake Errol Flynn. And at the end of the movie, he steals the main character's jetpack, becoming a Rocket Robin Hood.
What's your question?
It's not a question. I just thought it was an amazing series of coincidences that brought The Adventures of Robin Hood and Rocket Robin Hood together into one.
Yes, that is amazing.
Well, I appreciate you humoring what can only be described as my insanity.
No problem.
Okay. Now I think we have actual topics to talk about.
Okay. I think the first real topic...
Yes.
Is that neither of us watched Alice on Sci-Fi this weekend.
That is correct. And I like to pretend that I had a good reason for not watching Alice.
I actually do have a good reason.
Ooh, I would love to hear your good reason.
I was studying.
Oh, okay. See, I don't have that good a reason.
And because I studied and didn't watch Alice, I kicked ass on my exam. So.
Okay. Yeah. Now, I just want to remind you, this is not a show about anthropology or whatever the hell it is you studied.
I just, you know, wanted to say that...
Okay. I did not watch the show. Because what little I saw of Tin Man was horrible, so I did not want to risk that happening again. But more importantly, and maybe this is silly, but a little more importantly than that, I did tune into exactly like 1 minute of it, and I was so bored by that 1 minute. I know, like, it's, how do I put this? It felt like they were trying way too hard, because the character of Alice has been thrown in an insane asylum, and she walks through a door, and behind her is this swirling black and white hypnotism thing, and there's no floor or sky or walls or anything, and then a guy walks out in a leather suit like he's in frigging Dune, and he's like, I am Dr. Dumb, and this is my brother, Dr. D. And I'm like... Oh, God. Oh, God, no. Just take this away from me, please.
See, I saw less than a minute.
Okay.
And it featured the Mad Hatter, and I was really disappointed with what I saw. And I mean that in the most literal sense. I don't know anything about what he was doing, the context of his actions. I just didn't like what I was looking at.
Oh, my God.
Mostly because I'm a little, I guess, taken with the idea of Johnny Depp as the Mad Hatter.
As the Mad Hatter, right. Okay. I see that.
So this other guy, you know,
He's got big shoes to fill.
Exactly. Exactly.
I can't say that it was Johnny Depp that was making me question this one. I understand you have strong feelings towards Johnny Depp, so I don't... I don't judge you for that. But for me, I hoped that I was really keeping my fingers crossed that somewhere around hour five, she'll like walk onto a beach and there'll be like a carpenter there and a walrus. And like the carpenter is like cracking clams open and throwing them to the walrus, who I want to point out will be just a walrus, not anthropomorphized in any way. And she's like, who are you two? And they will say, where the walrus, he'll say, I'm the carpenter, he's a walrus. They gave up modernizing people at this point in the movie.
Oh, no.
Wouldn't that be hilarious?
I can't comment.
Oh, come on. You know that would be fun. Yeah, they gave up. So I'm just a carpenter, he's just a walrus. It's no longer a message about organized religion.
I thought that was just made up for dogma.
No, it wasn't. That wasn't just made up for dog.
Oh.
That sequence is actually an attack on organized religion. He's a carpenter, really? For God's sake. Come on. Anyway,
but okay, but I guess on the topic of Alice.
Yes.
And I guess I want to call it Alice Frenzy, but I can't really call it that because there really isn't much of a frenzy.
No, not at all.
But I played half of American McGee's Alice years and years ago.
Oh, okay.
And his Alice, she's in the... I actually still have the book that came with the game.
Oh.
And it... Yeah, it's really cool. It's actually kind of... It's a creepy read. It's a doctor's journal. And Alice is a patient that comes to him, and he runs an insane asylum.
Yeah.
And she's... When she arrives at the asylum, she's catatonic.
Ooh.
Having survived the fire that destroyed her family home.
Ooh.
And when she's brought in, there's this mangy cat that, like, sits on her and sort of, and creeps all the doctors out. So in the game, Alice is this, crazy nutcase, and they don't know what happened to her. Like they can't get through to her because she's in this catatonic state. It's really, like, I liked that spin on things. It's really dark, obviously.
Yeah.
So that was, yeah, so it kind of sounds like this was sort of heading off in that direction where she's, you know, in the loony bin.
Yeah, I don't think it did. I think it's, like, they're criminals and it's the criminal underworld and that's what Wonderland is, something like that. All I know is Wonderland, unlike the CBC TV show, no longer refers to the poverty court system. I know, we were all hoping that would be the twist, but no, this is not the
CBC. No, that's not it.
That's right. Two CBC references this week.
Wow.
And they say there's no Canadian content on the Avon. No, seriously, though.
It actually says that. No one actually. The show is nothing but Canadian content.
Although the weird thing about American McGee's Alice is, like, for years they tried to develop it as a movie, and I think what happened was someone noticed that, wait a minute, Alice in Wonderland is copyright cleared. We don't actually have to pay American McGee to make an edgy Alice in Wonderland.
They probably should have.
Yeah, no, they probably should have, but no one did, and now Tim Burton's done it. So there you go. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if his is going to be nearly as dark.
No, probably not, although everything looks really creepy in those ads, so it'll be pretty dark. All right, so moving right along to the things we're actually here to talk about.
That was one of the things you're actually here.
Oh, it was. The fact that
it's on the list.
It is on the list. See, this is why I should consult the list. Seriously.
Yes. Moving right along to the next thing we're here to
talk about, which, as I understand it, is a little show called Dollhouse Returns.
That's right. Dollhouse back on TV this past Friday. I guess that was the 4th, December 4th, with two episodes back to back.
Yay!
And, yeah, that was a good 2 hours of television right
oh
there.
Oh my god, was it ever.
I guess because season 2 so far has been pretty hit and miss.
Yes.
And the consensus is that the Echo Light episodes are actually better than the Echo Heavy episodes, I suppose.
I could not agree with that more strongly.
Which seems a little odd given that the show is kind of about Echo.
Yeah, but she sadly is the least entertaining part of her own show.
But anyway, the two episodes that aired last week get back to kind of like the heart of the show, which is this big conspiracy with the Rossum Corporation and all this other stuff. So, and it really picked up the pace too.
Yeah, it did.
Because, you know, we're heading towards a great finale, it looks like.
Oh god, I'm so excited. And, spoiler alert, Alan Tudyk will be back before the show ends.
I know. I saw the.
I just found out.
Dollhouse, and he was all over the place.
See, I did not know that part.
Oh.
I just heard he was going to be back. I didn't watch Next Time on Dollhouse.
Oh, I did.
Well, apparently he's going to be all over the place.
Next episode. You're damn right I will. And it was Alan Tudyk all the time.
Yeah, he is. He is the reason we watch.
Yes.
And I think they're going to get you know who back. Dominic back too before the end of the show, so keep your fingers crossed. And I was reading an interview with Joss Whedon, and according to him, everything will be wrapped up in that last episode. Like,
oh my god,
he's not going to be like dangling plot threads. Oh, maybe we'll get to do a Dollhouse movie. No, this is it. This is the end of the story. No more Dollhouse. We are giving you an ending to Dollhouse with Epitaph 2.
Okay.
Oh, and thank God for that. I mean, I would have liked there to be, honestly, I would have liked there to be 5 seasons of Dollhouse, I'm not going to lie. But if there can only be 2, I want it to be 2 that wraps everything the F up.
Well, of course.
You know, I don't want this to be another one of those situations where we have no idea how things ended, which happens way too often.
Yeah, but I don't think Joss Whedon's that kind of a guy.
No, he's not. He's clearly not. And
yeah.
That's why I'm so happy about this show.
Highlights from last week's episode.
Oh.
Has got to be Victor being Topher.
Oh my God!
Unbelievable.
I don't know who that however the hell you pronounce that guy's name is.
Enver.
Enver. No, the last name.
Oh, I've given up. He's Enver.
Yeah, that Enver guy. I don't know where the hell they found him, but he's incredible.
Yeah. Actually, I saw him in something else.
Really?
What the fuck was it? Oh, it's going to kill me.
Was he incredible?
Anyway.
You know, the
not
internet could help you with this.
Yeah, but I shut down the internet.
Oh, okay. Forget it then. Was he incredible there, too?
What?
Was he incredible there as well?
Oh, probably. I think I just noticed him. I was like, hey, that's Victor. And
then,
you know, that was the end of it. Anyway, he was fantastic.
He was amazing playing the same character. And I mean, I'm not comparing him to the other actor. And obviously it's going to be so much harder for a woman to play that character because that character's a dude. But if you compare that to the time last year that Sierra tried to play that character.
I don't think Sierra was exactly Topher.
No, she was exactly Topher. They were the same person. She was supposed to be playing him. He made, that's what he does in his birthday, he makes another him. That's why his brain print is lying around to just stick into Victor for that sequence. And oh my God, did Victor do it incredible. And all the stuff with River from Firefly was amazing.
Yeah, she was very good.
She was just creepy as hell.
And they had like these sort of great kind of, I guess, Frankenstein-inspired moments when she's torturing Echo. And,
no.
You know, the lights are going crazy and everything. It was fantastic.
Yeah, and all of this stuff with Alexis Denisoff was wonderful. Oh, my God. And here's the thing. You look at V with its ridiculous right-wing message that's really writing absurdly in your face. Right? Where they're like, don't you get it? The aliens are Obama. And Obama's evil. Huh? Whereas this... Joe, it took me until I was reading a review of it later to get that they were taking a shot at George Bush with the Alexis Denisoff character.
Wow.
That they specifically refer to him as a guy who, you know, partied away his family name until his mid-30s when he suddenly, you know, became a corporate tool.
Oh, shit, that's right. I didn't even catch that.
No, I completely missed it, too. And the thing is, it's this left-wing mean message that's, like, incredibly subtle. So,
well,
yeah.
I guess, you know, that's, like, the big difference between the two shows. And I get you can sort of draw this line for a lot of the shows on TV. It's just the quality of the writing and the use of subtlety and subtext.
Yeah, as opposed to the horribly over-the-top of, I guess you'll still have to rely on your flu vaccines.
So, yeah.
One of the low points in television.
So, Dollhouse, awesome. Very much looking forward to the next
depressed.
Two episodes.
I am honestly incredibly depressed that we're going to, in like a month, be doing our farewell to Dollhouse show.
I know.
How sad is that?
It is sad. And I actually read a little thing online about... what exactly happened to the show.
No one watched it.
Well, no, it's actually more... I mean, nobody watched it. They gave it, like, the time slot of death.
That didn't
first
help.
Of all, which didn't help. But also, I think it was the same with Firefly. They signed it and then decided they didn't want it anymore. That's what I actually like said that in this thing that I was reading.
Wow. It's the thing that they
and
always
then
say about Fox.
Joss wanted the show to go sort of in a different direction than what Joss had envisioned.
Wow.
And there might have been a little bit of I don't want to say fighting going on, but I guess a bit of a conflict of interest there. And Joss's original vision was quite dark and kind of scary.
And
Fox was really uncomfortable with it.
Oh, okay.
And so there was a lot of tooling around that was
It would
done.
Be great if you could put a link to this article you're talking about in the show notes for once, so that
I really don't remember where I read this.
Oh, my God.
Some other link I found somewhere else. I mean, I'll do what I can, but...
Please.
I make no promises.
Oh, we never ask you to promise anything.
You ask me to promise all the time.
All the damn time, and you never do it.
So, I'm trying to discourage you from making me promise things.
That's true. Okay, don't promise. Just continue being a jerk. Anyway, seriously, though. Let's move on from Dollhouse, a show that I would call arguably the best show on television. It's been very hit or miss this year. They had that I can't believe how bad this hour television I'm watching is one about her being a mother.
Yes, that was a low point for sure.
I'm like, and just the fact that it didn't even work within the logic of the show's universe, because I'm like, so he's hiring... two dolls for 24 hours a day for 4 months? You're like, what? How much money would that cost?
It doesn't matter. Everyone who hires the Dollhouse is stinking rich.
Yeah, but they only hire the Dollhouse for like a weekend. This is a doll being out for 4 months.
So?
But anyway, let's continue. I hated that episode. point I'm getting at. Is that there's another show on right now, a horror-themed show. That also starts with D, and one of us was negligent about not watching until just now. And that show is called Dexter. And I hope that we don't have divergent feelings on the show Dexter. Because I hate the show Dexter.
Oh... You know I love the show Dexter.
How can you love the show Dexter?
How can you hate it?
It's terrible.
No, it's not.
Oh, I can't imagine. You got to admit, it's the stupidest show on television.
I don't think it's stupid.
Like,
I have the exact opposite opinion of you.
Okay. But I mean... All of the characters are such idiots, and Dexter's such a moron. Oh.
I don't think so. Like I said, exact opposite.
Okay, well, I know we're not going to get into a complete rundown of the entire show this week. Because, you know, the season finale of the second season hasn't aired yet, and I want us to be able to talk about the John Lithgow stuff. What's that?
You said second season.
Oh, sorry, fourth season. Ugh. Sorry, I just started thinking about the awful second season. But we can talk about that later. So
I don't think we're ever going to revisit this topic, to be perfectly frank.
I would like to revisit this topic, because I would like to go into Dexter in depth. But you know what? Let's talk a little about it now and see where we get. Your generic feelings on Dexter.
Love it.
No, but why do you love it? Is it because you have terrible taste in things?
Okay, first of all... Everybody knows I have terrible taste in things.
That is a well-established fact. I'm not going to deny that.
But then again, so do you.
I do. No, I have famously bad taste in things. Don't get me wrong. I totally do.
The show just totally appeals to me. I think because there's a certain amount of melodrama, and because I'm a little bit of a girly girl, I'm going to go for the melodrama. Like, it will strike a chord within me.
Okay.
Dexter's, I mean, he's a total monster, agreed, a complete, you know, sociopath, but he's just a lovable character.
Okay, here's, my problem with the show is, might be different than what you think it is, because, first off...
You seem to think everybody's a moron.
Okay, I do think everybody's a moron. I'm sorry, everything that has happened in the fourth season... Has everybody been a moron? But let's continue. You gotta give me that the fourth season has been pretty weak.
I don't think so at all.
Oh my god. What is wrong with you, woman? But anyway,
What is wrong with you?
Okay, the thing about Dexter, the character, is that he is what gets me about it is he's so profoundly not a sociopath at all. And the one thing I thought the interesting place that the show was going to go in the first season was exploring the fact that this guy didn't have to be this screwed up, except his dad told him he was a monster, you know, treated him like he was a monster his whole life. And it kind of turned to be like, where he could have gotten therapy and turned out pretty normal, instead his dad treated him like he was a monster and he got a monster. And yet the show has never explored that idea in four seasons.
You're thinking too far outside of the whole premise of the show.
Okay, but what I'm saying is that what Dexter went through cannot create a sociopath. It can screw you up. Of course it would. But he was already four. You know, the parts of your brain that decide whether you can empathize with people, that's already taken care of by them.
But his father didn't think that there was any help for Dexter.
No, he didn't.
So he raised him to be what he is.
That's what I'm pointing at. But I'm saying...
No, but see, this is the whole premise of the show. So you can't, you can't get all worked up about something like that. Because if you don't buy into that premise, you're not going to buy into the show to begin with.
Well, I'm not buying into the show. That's part of my problem. The show has not, won me over. But let's continue with my commentary on it, if you don't mind. See, I'm trying to be a jerk. Okay, what I'm getting at is...
Trying to be a jerk?
Hey! What bothers me about the show is, right, every time Dexter, right, gets into a situation where he's around people, he's like, oh, I don't know how to understand, it's so weird because I don't have emotions and blah, 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 blah. And what bugs me about this is I'm like, you're supposed to be a smart character. First off, serial killers are often pretty good at blending. We're not getting into that. But more to the point, like, he's constantly like, how do I respond in this situation? How do people in relationships act? And I'm like, he acts like Dr. Phil doesn't exist.
You are totally overselling it.
No, I'm not. Because
you are overstating it.
No, I'm not. Because he's constantly freaking acting like Data on the show. Like, he has no idea how humans can possibly interact, as if he couldn't walk into any store anywhere in the world and buy 50 books on how people interact. You see what I'm saying? Like, he acts like human behavior is this, huge mystery, when in fact it's pretty well documented and all, let out exactly how any given person will react in any given situation based on their personality type.
He knows how people are supposed to react, but the problem is that he knows that he's also faced with a multitude of choices for every situation. So it's a matter of him trying to decide which reaction he should go for, which reaction is the correct reaction for the type of person that he's trying to be. Also, every time he has this dilemma, it's because he's confronted with a new situation.
Ah, okay. So let's move on from the character of Dexter, who, I find interminable, and I think you're a sap for not hating. But let's continue on from the character of Data. See, that's how I think of him. From the character of Dexter to the hilarious plotting on this show. And that comes into with a little thing called the first season. And in the first season, there was a character named the Ice Truck Killer, who was driving around town in an ice truck, cutting up prostitutes, draining all their blood, and then leaving their limbs, which were painted with cute fingernails, in packages. It was a really, really elaborate, the kind of serial killer that only exists in fiction kind of serial killer thing. And how shall I put this? It had the most ludicrous twist that I've maybe ever seen in my life. Because there's a scene in this in that season of television when I'm watching the show and a guy walks into a room about six episodes in, And I'm like, well, you're a killer. On his first line.
So?
No, no.
It's not meant to be a mystery for you, really.
It's meant to be a mystery.
For the characters in the show, if you figured it out already.
I'm saying it's not, hold on. Are you trying to tell me they're not intending for the audience to be surprised when they reveal who the ice truck killer was?
I don't think so.
Okay. Now you're just being intellectually dishonest because it was set up.
How can you say that? You don't know what I'm saying.
It was being set up as such an obvious, like, huge dramatic moment when they revealed who it was. Because there's a, like, they do the worst job of hiding who that killer is that I've ever seen on a TV show. But let's, okay, you want to move on from that. Let's move on to season two, when the show kind of said, established this whole thing of, we're going to cop out. We're never going to give Dexter an actual dilemma to deal with. Right? Like, because he, and this is what I liked most about the show. There was a character on the show who was a god-awful actor. And I can't believe how bad this actor is, okay? But I loved his character because his character was a guy who hated Dexter because he knew there was something off about Dexter, but he couldn't quite put his finger on it. And that was a really interesting dynamic.
You identified with the character because he hates Dexter as much as you do.
Maybe that too, but you got to admit, having someone who just knew there was something wrong with Dexter hanging around Dexter all the time was an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Okay. Now, in the season of the show, he figures out Dexter's a murderer, Dexter kidnaps him, and Dexter is dealt with the first moral dilemma he's ever had to deal with. Do I turn myself in or do I murder this guy? And the show, instead of actually dealing with this dilemma, completely cops out. Cops out harder than almost any show has ever copped out.
It didn't bother me.
You really, the incredible cop-out at the end of season two did not bother you at all.
No, like I said, because it's all of this melodrama surrounding the situation.
Oh my god.
That's what drives... I don't think you fully understand that that's really what drives this show.
I understand. I'm saying it could be a good show instead of a guilty pleasure. And that's what pisses me off about it. It has... I think it clearly has, like, the elements to be actually really interesting drama that asks interesting moral questions. But it's so terribly written that it only works as a guilty pleasure. In fact, I would consider the time I spend watching Dexter my guiltiest pleasure. I feel worse about watching Dexter than I do about watching any other show.
A guilty pleasure is something you're supposed to enjoy doing, and you don't enjoy watching this show.
I don't enjoy any of my guilty pleasures.
You can't. So those, technically, by definition, are
in a normal person, this would be the guilty pleasure. But as we have well established...
This isn't a guilty pleasure for a lot of people. It's just a pleasure. People don't feel badly about enjoying Dexter because they don't think it's a bad show.
Well, if they don't know it's a bad show, that makes me sad for them. But the point is...
You're going to find that you're in the minority on this.
I am
Dexter,
so...
Dexter, I don't... It isn't a bad show.
It is. It's terribly written. I don't know how you don't see this. But, okay, let's...
I think it's a great show. It's exciting. It keeps me intrigued.
And you don't find his voiceovers to be the most horribly written things in the world?
No, not at all.
Because
and I think it's really funny.
Wow. Oh my god, it's like all of my respect for you is just sapping out as we're having this conversation.
I already said this. Your problem is that you don't buy into the premise of the show to begin with.
Well, because I know that how flawed... I could like the show if it was well... No, you're saying I don't completely buy into the premise. As I said, if they were willing to examine the fact that what Harry did to him destroyed his life rather than giving him... destroyed a life he could have had rather
than
giving
him... I think you fail to understand that that's not actually what this show is about. It's not about the possibility that Dexter could have been something other than he is. The way the show works, in the world of this show, it's there was only one option for Dexter.
No, no, what I'm saying
is... There was never the possibility that Dexter would have just been, or could have been, like, a normal kid with a few problems. He was always going to be some kind of weird, soulless monster, so Harry did the best that he could working with what he had.
Yes, but what I'm saying is that's not how people or the world work.
Yeah, but this show isn't set in, like, our regular, everyday world.
Yes, it is! It's not set in a fantasy alternate universe.
Preposterousness of the ice truck killer.
Oh my god, it's not set in a fantasy alternate universe, it's set in the real world.
I have to disagree with
honestly,
you.
Honestly, that's like saying that Silence of the Lambs isn't set in the real world because no one like Hannibal Lecter could ever exist.
I'm saying that based on the arguments that you've put forward, it's entire Dexter. If you look at it as it being set in a world where the rules are a little different than the ones that are in our world, the show makes perfect sense for what it is.
Yeah, but you're asking me to create an alternate reality where the show exists in, where it's a good written show, rather than if you apply the show to the real world, as everyone else does, where it's a badly written show.
But this goes back to the whole premise of the show.
No, what I'm saying is the premise of the show... Okay, cop has an illegitimate child with one of his confidential informants. Or I assume it's Harry's illegitimate child. I mean, I always figured that, but maybe it turns out he's not.
Yeah, it is. You're obviously not paying attention because...
I know. No, I'm saying...
revealed on the show.
Oh, it was... No, it was revealed that he was sleeping with the mother, but, you know, they've never actually come out and said he's actually Deb's half-brother. They've never actually come out and said that. But yeah, has an illegitimate child, then that gets murdered, and then he starts raising him. And the point is, like, all of that is within the realm of reality. And what I'm saying is this extra level to his relationship with his adoptive/real father, Harry, if Harry made a mistake in raising him the way he did, I think that would add a level of drama to humanize all of the characters and bring it closer to reality. You see? Like, the Dexter could have gone two ways, and that makes what Dexter ended up as more tragic and more horrible. See what I'm saying?
But that's not what this show is about.
But it's about the character. It's about the character of Dexter, and I think they're doing bad character work with the character of Dexter.
But I don't have the words at the moment to really properly explain this.
Okay. Take your time. You know what? I'm not going to ask you to, you know, defend. I'm not going to ask you to defend extensively Dexter right now. You've got to give me something. This entire storyline with Dexter's captain and her boyfriend, the sergeant, has been one of the stupidest things in the history of television, right? You've got to give me that.
It doesn't really bother me.
Really? That doesn't... The preposterousness of this storyline doesn't bother you at all?
No. Why should it?
Because it's so terribly written.
Yeah, but you think the entire show is terribly written.
I do.
So for you to pull out one story arc that you think is bad really doesn't change anything for me, considering that you have the complete opposite opinion regarding everything about the show that I have.
No, I can admit when stuff is well done.
Yeah, you haven't pointed out a single instance on this show where something has been well done.
His relationship with Jimmy Smits in season 3 I found very interesting and compelling.
Okay.
See? I don't have blinkers on. I didn't hate this show from the first second and then think,
That's kind of what you were saying.
No. I didn't hate the show from this first second and then immediately try things to justify my hatred. The show continually did things that made me hate it. Do I continue watching it? Yes. That's because I'm a screwed up person who can't stop watching things I hate. Look at The Simpsons, okay? I've hated it for 12 years and I've seen every episode. It's something that's wrong with me. But that doesn't mean that I go into things looking to hate them, okay? And for anyone who's heard more than one AVOD, you could easily think that I go into things looking to hate them. I understand that. But I don't. I try to give everything a fair shake unless it's made by Uwe Boll. Or Paul Anderson, or Quentin Tarantino, Eli Roth. Okay, there's a couple of people who I do not give a fair shake to. But everything else, I give a fair shake. And hey, I love fiction about serial killers, so of course I was happy to give Dexter a fair shake. But I find everything about it to be so terribly written that I can't give it a fair shake. I find his sister's character to be so insufferable. I find all the characters, like, and I find everyone on the show to be so dumb that, like, there's this sequence where the, where, like, that I, my jaw, like, drops maybe once an episode when someone has done, based on how stupid something is. Like, I would give you more examples from earlier in the show, but it's not like I've ever gone back and watched it again. So just from season four, like, there's this thing where it turns out that Deb, spoiler alert, and her boyfriend, Keith Carradine, who, by the way, is creepy as hell on Dollhouse, another connection between the two, right, gets shot by someone because he's investigating John Lithgow, serial killer. And about halfway through the season, like, it's clear right away that John Lithgow, serial killer, didn't do it, because that wouldn't be a twist, and God, how the Dexter show loves its twists. But, so they figure out that she was shot by someone who was a little shorter than her. And then they realize suspiciously that this mysterious reporter who's been hanging around a lot is a little shorter than Deb, and she got to the crime scene a little too fast. Huh? And so they bring her in to interview her. And I'm watching it, and I'm like, oh, God, so they're going to confront her with the fact that she shot Deb. And I'm like, okay, they're on top of this. And so they get this view of this interview with her, right? And they're like, she doesn't know it. She's refusing to tell us what she saw. Oh, and they're suddenly acting like they think she's a witness. And then they act like it's a revelation when it occurs to one of them 5 seconds later. Wait a minute. The height? She was there at the time of the murder? Maybe she did the shooting! And I'm like, the audience got there 2 episodes ago. Why are you all so stupid? Do you see what I'm saying?
Again.
You're right. I have to accept that in the world of the show, all of the cops are functionally retarded.
I have to disagree with you. I think the show, of course the audience got there before everybody else did. But it's about knowing what you know to be true and then being justified in that knowledge, I guess. That's how I describe it. Like, okay. I knew that she had shot her.
Yeah.
And it's watching them get to that point where they have the reveal. And it's like, yeah, you were right. And it's just, you know, it's an exciting moment.
Yes.
For the viewer.
Okay. No, I see what you're saying about it being an exciting moment. But my point more is that I feel like the characters, given the information they have, should come up to these conclusions faster. But they never seem to. They always seem to be real stoops about things. That and, like, the sloppy writing around, this past episode, it's gotten so sloppy where Dexter's just walking around in broad daylight, breaking into people's trucks and killing them within their own trucks and then planting evidence in their own houses in broad daylight, just assuming no one will see him. Like, it's just gotten so weirdly sloppily written that, you know, it's not even working as a dirty pleasure for me anymore. Guilty pleasure for me anymore because, you know, the show doesn't seem to care in a lot of points anymore about a lot of this stuff. Do you see what I'm saying?
I think that when I watch the show, and I see Dexter going about sort of doing his own serial killer thing.
Yeah.
There's always this anxiety that he's going to get caught because he does take unnecessary risks sometimes.
Yeah.
And so you have this weird expectation that something really bad is going to happen this time and he's going to get caught. He's going to get found out. Like when he was breaking his neighbor's lights and Rita saw him doing it, you're always waiting for something like that to happen. And it's just the buildup of anxiety makes the show that much more exciting for the viewer because he's not going to get caught, but there's always the possibility that it might happen.
Okay, I see what you're saying, and I totally agree that it's a good show, that the show is pretty good at building tension. What bothers me about the show is that after building that tension, they tend to have a cop-out reveal, cop-out resolution instead of having Dexter find a clever way out of it. See what I'm saying? Like, if they wrote him as clever ways to get out of trouble as they write him getting into trouble.
But he doesn't ever really get into serious trouble. It's just the possibility of it happening.
Yeah. Just the pause. Okay, I guess what I'm saying is, like, it's like in season 3 when Jimmy Smits knew who he was and what he was up to. And I'm like, I feel like Jimmy Smits did not take the kind of precautions. Yeah, he sent another murderer after Dexter, and that's all well and good. But I'm like, there's so many other precautions a smart public figure like Jimmy Smits could have taken to keep himself from being murdered by Dexter, and he didn't take any of them. You know, it's like, this is the knowledge about Dexter's being a serial killer is, and the fear that he's going to kill you is why God invented leaving a sealed letter with your lawyer and then telling somebody about it. But it's like, well, nothing like that even came up.
Jimmy Smits's character was such an egomaniac
that it just didn't even occur to him.
He didn't need, yeah, it never occurred to him that he had to take those steps. He also gave Dexter a shirt with cow blood on it.
I know, that was hilarious.
So, you know.
But I guess the fact that he was clever enough to give Dexter a shirt with cow blood on it made me wonder why he wasn't clever enough to take additional, you know, steps.
Again, ego.
Yeah, but
I mean, his brother kind of lays it out.
Yeah, what I'm saying is, if he had had enough smarts to do that...
Well, he probably figured that was all he needed to do.
Yeah, but even after Dexter has announced that he's going to kill him. Remember when they're like, we're going to serial killer war.
Thinks he's untouchable.
Okay. Anywho, let's stop talking about that and consider that, like... I can't stand this show. And can I just point out that, for the love of God, there's going to be 2 more seasons of it.
I know, it's going to be great.
Oh my God. All right, well, we're meeting...
You have to watch it.
You know I have to watch it.
Well, you know what, though? You shouldn't be allowed to complain about it. If you watch a show...
I shouldn't be allowed to complain about it?
If you watch a show that you hate repeatedly, and you go into the show hating it, you come out of the show hating it, and yet you make a point to watch it every week, why should you be allowed to complain about it at length?
I should be allowed to complain about it because I watched it. The price of admission for complaining.
It's like people complaining about what they see on Fox News. Well, you know what? If you don't like what Fox News has to say, don't fucking watch Fox News. It's the same thing.
It's not the same thing at all.
Of course it is.
No, it's not. This is a show in the genre I love about a premise that I really love. So the fact that it, you know, doesn't do anything good with that, realistic without a rel written with that, is an offense against me because it could be a good show that I love.
So complain about it once and then move on like everybody else does.
No, because it does a new stupid thing every week. It's not like the show just does the same stupid thing every week. It finds new ways to be stupid every passing week.
And yet, you continue to watch.
We've just established why I continue to watch.
You subject yourself to that kind of torture.
I can't believe you're even asking me why I subject myself. You know why I subject myself to that kind of torture. Obviously, I hate myself, and I'm trying to punish myself for being a horrible person.
And then why do you feel the need to punish the rest of us along with yourself?
Because I think people have a right to know how awful Dexter is. Because there's so many people like you out there misinforming them.
Awful. That's
misinforming people as to the show's quality. Telling people that it's a good, cool show that they should be watching.
It's a good show. It's a personal opinion.
Hold on. There's personal opinion, and then there's quantifiable good-bad writing. And this falls onto, personally, you like the show. But quantifiably, it's not a well-written show.
I don't know.
You don't know.
If it weren't a well-written show, I probably wouldn't like it as much as I do. I probably wouldn't be as invested in the show as much as I am.
Okay, well... We know that's not true, because you love crap all the time. But let's talk about... I just want to point out something else. That it's not like I'm just going in to hate things. It's not like I am cold against certain things. In a show I love, I can find bad things. In a show I hate, I can find good things. For example, like I said, I loved the whole, until the bad, way it all ran down, I liked the third season of Dexter. I liked it a lot. Whereas, compare that to, there's a show I love out there, Sons of Anarchy, that had a second season finale that was, oh my god, I can't believe what a bad hour of television I'm watching. So, you know, I'm capable of seeing good in bad things and bad in good things. You know, I am not a chauvinist on either side of this equation, okay?
Okay, fair enough.
I'm not blind to faults or qualities. All right, so I think we're safe to move on from Dexter. I think our diametric opposition over the show's points is clear enough. Although I reserve to write to next week, gloat when the whole John Lithgow thing ends with a complete cop-out. And I'm not saying
it probably,
will.
Probably, I'm going to go ahead and say it right now. I'm probably going to find it really exciting. I'm just saying.
Okay. I'm not saying
and
it definitely
And I'll like
has
to be watching it with two of my friends who also love the show. So
I'm glad to hear that.
The excitement level will be multiplied by three.
No, I don't think that will be by three, because you're one and multiply
and
by
and two others.
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah, you're doing the math that way. I get it. But anyway, seriously though,
you're not. You're just like trying to find reasons to call me out.
I am now. Now like I've given up on sense. Now I'm just accusing you of bad math. Seriously though, I look forward to coming back here to see how they wrap up the John Lithgow situation.
I don't want to talk about this anymore.
That's just because you feel like your worldview has been threatened. I don't. I know them.
Not at all. It just, just talking with you about this clearly pisses me off to no end.
I know, because you're, you know, getting to the point where you're realizing that it's not actually a good show. And
that's not it at all. That is not it
for someone like you.
I will fully admit if something's shit. You know that. Our viewer knows it. I wouldn't admit this is shit because I just don't feel that it is.
And that's a conversation we can have after they completely cop out next week. Anyway, moving right along to our final feature topic of the night. Mm-hmm. I think our viewer would like to hear what we think about another serial killer biopiece.
Yes, I think people will be pleasantly surprised to know that we agree on this one. At least I think we do.
Oh, do we?
I don't know anymore.
I loved this with eight reservations.
Eight reservations? Okay, what we're talking about is a movie called Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon, which a bit of a sleeper hit, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
Flew under a lot of people's radar, but everyone I know who's seen it really loves it.
Yeah.
There's just something about this movie.
Well, the thing is,
and like the more I watched it,
you just watched it once. Don't lie.
I only saw it that one time, but I guess the more I got into the movie, the more I liked it. That's what
yeah.
I can't articulate how I feel about this film very well. Yeah, it's a great movie. I was a little unsure, actually, at the beginning when we first met Leslie. I mean, the premise I liked.
Yeah.
And the movie opens with this very crummy documentary footage, which is and like this terrible, terrible voiceover. By the girl who's directing and hosting this documentary. It's just so well done.
Yeah. The kind of thing that would be non-ironically repeated in Diary of the Dead.
But yeah, the more I got into it, the more I really liked it. It's a great film.
There is a lot to love about this movie. Like, yeah. I would never deny that. I personally enjoyed quite a bit about it.
I will synopsize briefly.
Please.
Leslie Vernon.
Complete, just for the record, just so you know that we're hip and in the know, yes, we all recognize it's a complete ripoff of Man Bites Dog. We all saw Man Bites Dog. We all love Man Bites Dog. This is a complete ripoff, but it does its own thing too, so don't call us out on that.
So, the story is that many years ago, Leslie Vernon was raised on this farm and abused by his parents, and whom he then turned on and murdered horribly. And he was taken from his home by an angry mob and thrown off a waterfall. And was never seen or heard from again. So now, Leslie Vernon is back, and he's trying to become a serial killer like Jason or Freddy or Michael, who are real people in the world of this movie. Serial killers really do exist. Serial killers of the
slasher
variety. The slasher type, yes, thank you. And so Leslie Vernon wants to become one of these iconic serial killers. So he's put together this elaborate plan to stalk and murder a group of high school kids, and he has his final girl all picked out. And there's this video crew that follows him around to document his, I guess, rise to fame, as it were. And he, as they follow him around, you get to know a bit more about him and who he is. And he's got this mentor who's an old serial killer who terrorized people in the 1960s. And he's really like a nice, lovable guy. And he, I guess, shows you all the behind the scenes stuff that goes on in these movies, all the preparation that's involved in stalking and murdering a group of teenagers. And it is fantastic. It's very funny. It's lighthearted. And it breaks out all the horror movie conventions.
Yeah. No, it really does.
And the movie was great. It was just great. I can't say enough good things about it, really. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
There is a lot to love in this movie. No, there really is. And hey, Zelda Rubinstein cameo.
That's right. And Robert Englund's in it.
Oh, so, God. Wasn't Robert Englund.
I'm a sucker for Robert Englund.
Yeah, he's one of those actors who I'll just watch him in anything.
Yeah. So the movie kind of...
I saw The Mangler 2, okay?
I own The Mangler. No, I own The Mangler.
The Mangler. No, he was in The Mangler. Lance Henriksen was in The Mangler 2.
Yes.
Yeah, I get that backwards.
We're getting confused. Anyway, Behind the Mask mixes this documentary, or mockumentary, I guess, with actual narrative film. So you have like real filmic moments that would be straight out of a slasher movie. That's how they're written, that's how they're shot, and that's what they're supposed to be. And they're just as formulaic.
As the movies they're parodying.
Exactly. But it's just, the whole thing is just really well done. So
yeah, it's done with such a knowing, you know, from a knowing point of view. Like, they really, for the most part, they really understand, you know, the films they're talking about. So you get a lot of fun winks. And I really enjoyed that. Like, I thought that was very high quality stuff.
So, like, Leslie survives getting shot, and he talks about it. He's like, well, you know, he was wearing a bulletproof vest, so it's no big deal. And he talks about he has to do a lot of physical training because he's got to be able to walk but keep up with people and then run around and make it seem like he's not out of breath and it's really no big thing. And he, like, rigs the lights to go out in the home where the kids are partying. And it's just... all the work that goes into being a serial killer, I guess, really gives you an appreciation for everything that, you know, Freddy and Jason and Michael have to do every time they set out to stalk and kill.
Yeah. Although I guess the only things that really got to me about, like, the only problem. Yeah, that's right. I have to have a problem with everything I watch. So, you know, shut up. But it's true. I guess the only thing I had a problem with is there was a couple of things that I found weird. Like, first off, I loved Robert Englund in it. I thought he was great. I thought a missed opportunity was to not acknowledge that Eugene, like, they didn't really get into the kind of films Eugene was representing.
I know, that would have been a lot of fun.
Like, I would have thought it would have been, like, really fun to take a knock, because he talks about being the 60s and before the 70s really brought the slasher to the forefront. And I thought, wouldn't it be fun to acknowledge that Eugene was, like, the main character of, like, old Herschel Gordon Lewis gore movies? Like, that would have been such a nice, and it seemed like such a missed opportunity to get into who Eugene was.
Yeah.
Right? That was A. B, they reinforced the virgin thing, which, you know, I've always had a problem ever since Men, Women, and Chainsaws. The whole associated virgin.
I'm not a fan of Clover, so.
Yeah. Like,
I would have preferred if the movie had gone maybe a bit of a different way with that.
Yeah, like the importance of being a virgin to surviving a horror movie. And I'm like, we all read Carol Clover and we all saw Scream, but you know what? Both of them got it wrong. Okay. Kevin Williams.
It's true. And I actually wrote about this on Zombot, actually.
I know. And no, I loved your piece about virginity and horror.
And it's actually, you know, virginity. I don't know. I'm not entirely sure actually where the whole virgin thing came from. And I seem to think maybe it was.
It's Halloween.
Is it Halloween?
It's Halloween and a bit of Nightmare on Elm Street.
But again, it's just, it's more, I guess, of, it's implied or inferred rather than actually.
Yeah. Yeah. We are inferring that rather than, yeah. No, absolutely. It's not a big deal. And, you know, it has made its way into actual films, but it's made its way into actual films because the films are being made by friggin' people who read Clover and saw Scream, okay? So, you know, that doesn't really count.
But Scream folds in on itself, though, because Sidney has sex and then defeats the bad guy.
Well, I know, because it's supposed to be, you know, postmodern and self-referential and all that crap.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the joke is that she's not a virgin anymore, but she still survived. But the point is, like, other people, they were addressing it ironically, whereas plenty of other people addressed it non-ironically after Scream.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
No, I know exactly what you're saying, and I just realized now that that was a stupid thing for me to say.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to show you up like that.
Sound like it never happened.
Okay. Yeah, and I guess, so like I said, my problem, so I didn't like it hitting on that so hard, and they acted like it was, they acted like it was a big deal that he had an Ahab chasing him down, but I'm like, that's not a big thing from horror. That's happened, like, once, ever. There's one Dr. Loomis, and no other character has ever had a Dr. Loomis, you know? Like, there's never been a continuing antagonist. Like, for,
I think that's why it's a big deal. Why he's got an A.
No, but they acted like there was an existing term for it because it's a thing that happens. And I'm like, well, no, if it's just happened the one time, he has a Loomis, not an Ahab. You know?
But I don't. I think they went with Ahab because they probably couldn't say a Loomis.
They talked about Michael Myers and Jason Voorhees.
And everybody's going to know. You know, everyone's going to get it.
Yeah, I'm just saying that they acted, the way he and Eugene talk about it, they act like it's a thing that happens, whereas, like, that never happens in horror. So I thought that was a little weird. But that was, like I said, like, I don't have a lot of other problems with that movie. I enjoyed the hell out of it. I know you're expecting me to, like, you know, do a 180 in, like, 5 seconds and announce that I actually hate it and get into a debate with you, but I won't, because I love slasher films, and this was a love letter to slasher films.
Yes, yes. It's exactly what it is, actually.
It is, you know?
It's really a really good way to describe it.
You know, it's like, this is just a fun, it's a jibe, it's a fun little, you know, don't you guys love this part of these movies? Don't you love it when they're running away and all that? And I do. And my only other problem with the movie is something you actually called out in your review, so now I don't have to get too in-depth of it, because go read the Dive Mistress's review, which you should anyway, is the fact that, despite the fact that they've been hanging out with Leslie for a month, when he, spoiler alert, turns on them and it just becomes a slasher movie at the end, like, they're not able to use their knowledge to their advantage.
Yes,
at all.
They're stuck within the convention, is what I said. And that doesn't really bother me. The problem that I had with it was They didn't try to break free from that.
No, they didn't even make an attempt. Like, if...
Yeah.
You know what would have been fun? You know what? And I mean, here now we're going to start the part where we kind of rewrite the movie a little, which we always end up doing. But you know what would have been really entertaining? If... Okay, and bear with me for a second. If they had found a way to... How do I describe this? Okay. Let them think that they, because, you know, Leslie had been showing them all this stuff, they knew how to beat him, but he had been setting up a second level of tricks to deal with them when he turned on them, you know? See what I'm saying?
Well, he had been.
Well, no, he really hadn't been, because the second, right, he
no,
said...
He did. No, he did. He set up two levels. There was a level that he showed them where he was stalking this one girl.
Yeah.
But he was actually going after Taylor, who's running the documentary. So
oh no, I understand.
He did have a whole second level prepared for her. He knew exactly what was gonna happen.
No, that's not what I mean. What I mean is not a level of his intentions. I mean a level of his specific tricks. Like he talks about the ways that he gets them to split apart, right? And, you know, and how they, obviously, they would be much better conditioned if they didn't split apart, but he tricks them, he has techniques he uses. And then, when the film crew is under attack from him, those exact tricks he talked about work on them.
Yeah. No, that's exactly what I was saying.
But I'm saying, I wish he had had a second set of tricks. Like, if he had actually planned for them for the fact that he showed them all of his tricks.
That's also what I was saying though. It's that they're now stuck in a slasher movie, and they still think that they still exist outside of the film.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
They don't know that they're in the movie now, and then when they do sort of come to realize that they're now a part of the movie. And that Leslie has planned for this to happen all along.
Yeah.
They don't use their knowledge to try and break free from...
From Leslie's plans. Exactly.
Leslie's movie. They don't try to use his conventions against him and then find out that they can't get out of his movie. Because
yeah, exactly. In fact, it never comes up. They just split up and get murdered exactly like everybody else.
No, I would have liked for that to have happened.
Yeah, that's what I meant about the second level. Like, they try to break out, but in trying to break out, they just come up against new things that he was planning that he didn't tell them about for this purpose.
Yeah.
That's what I meant about the second level.
We are in agreement.
Yeah. I know. Isn't it amazing how we're in agreement pretty much entirely on this movie? Like, this never happens.
I know.
Yeah, no, I did like so
the
much.
Very special Avod. And in the DM are
oh,
all the
my
same.
God. No, I liked so much about this movie. I hope there's not a sequel.
Yes.
Because I think that would ruin it.
I think the movie is just, it's fine the way it is. It doesn't need to have a sequel.
And I know, it was a little, like, it was a, if not a hit, it was beloved by the community.
Yes.
Like, a lot of people like this movie, and that made me very happy because I was one of them.
you actually felt like a part of something?
I actually felt like a part of something, you know? And
like the dude is throwing stones.
Okay, now you're just being a jerk. I don't know why you turned it into you being an ass, but you did. So, bravo.
I had the opportunity. I had to take it.
You do always do that, don't you? But anyway... Seriously, though, I know we've given away the entire movie. It sounds like we've given away the entire movie, right? But I would like to say that if you haven't seen, you know, Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon, you really have no excuse for not checking this one out. Because, I mean, it's just fun. There's a twist and we gave away the twist. But the fact is, you don't need the twist to enjoy this movie. Like, the twist, in fact, as we pointed out, was one of the weaker parts of the movie. The strong parts of this movie is the mechanics of being a slasher. And you know what? We haven't spoiled all of that. There's so much fun in just watching him go through these mechanics. Because it's the kind of thing where you've always sat and watched the movies and, oh, well, how did he do that? And, oh, well, here's how he did that. Here's how Jason appears to teleport all the damn time. No, you wondered, now you're getting it.
Yeah, and Leslie himself, he's really charming and charismatic. He's a great character.
And the actor does a great job with it. It's not my highest recommendation. I mean, this isn't Jekyll, but it's something that really, if you're a fan of the genre, you've got to check out.
Definitely.
I guess the only other thing that bothered me, there was one thing that gave off the worst vibe in the world in the movie, and then they didn't come back to it. And at first I was disappointed because they weren't addressing something, and then they started to address it, and it gave off the worst vibe in the world, but then they just completely dropped it. I'm like, oh god, thank god they didn't develop that any further. And that is why they are doing this and where their power comes from. Because I started out wondering, well, are they going to address where their power comes from and why they're doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And then they started to talk about, like, you know, making more fear in the world.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my god, this is about to become the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the next generation. And then he stopped talking about it. I'm like, that is good. It is better that they offer no explanation than this friggin' become that god-awful movie. Did you ever see that one?
No, I've never seen it.
Okay, I'm gonna... Spoiler alert for Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the next generation. At the beginning of the movie, Matthew McConaughey is driving... He plays the head of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre family in this one. He has a leg brace. He's hilarious. And he's driving a truck from Illuminati Towing. And Merman and I were watching it years ago, and we thought, that's kind of a weird name for a towing company. But okay. So then they get to the dinner scene that has to happen in every Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie. They get to the dinner scene, and do you know what the dinner scene is interrupted by?
I can't imagine.
A limo pulling up outside and a member of the Illuminati showing up and going on an extended monologue about how they fund people like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre family all over the world to create random fear in the public.
That's terrible.
And then he hires a guy in a biplane to come and kill Leatherface by flying the biplane really low and hitting him with the propeller. That's how bad that movie is.
Oh my god.
So you can see when they started talking about the possible origin of this stuff, how that would make me just have nightmarish flashbacks to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the next generation, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And, I would, now, to be fair, to be clearly honest, would I have liked to hear some explanation of where their power came from? Of course I would have. But you know what? I'm happier to leave it a mystery than them to have them do something awful.
That's true. Because chances are, you know, whatever reason they come up with, you're probably not going to like it anyway, so.
Exactly. Like, they would have to really knock my socks on their asses for me.
Might
to
as well just
give up.
Leave it. Yeah.
Oh, no, absolutely. And like I said, I'm glad they didn't do it. Okay. So, a nearly unmitigated recommendation for, which is as close to an outright, I mean, it's not Death Note, it's not Jekyll. If it's not one of those two things, you're not going to get an unmitigated recommendation out of us. But,
well, yeah.
It's some of the highest marks the AVOD has ever given out.
Yes.
For Behind the Mask. The Rise of Leslie Vernon.
Indeed. So I guess that about wraps it up.
I think it does. It about wraps it up for this week. Do we have any narcissism watch to check in on? Any news from the internet horror dating scene?
No news from the internet horror dating scene.
Damn it.
I think it's, I know, sad. It's been a bit of a bust, actually.
There are just not enough people on the site?
No, I don't know if that's it. I guess I'm quite shy.
Oh, okay.
So I really haven't been all that proactive about
getting you
going
out
there and meeting people. Also, I at the people that I've looked at, none of them are in my area anyway, so.
Oh.
That's a little bit of a problem.
Yeah, you're not flying to Denver or What's another random city? New Orleans.
Yeah. Or although I am going to attach New Orleans.
Oh yeah, I like that.
Live at the event.
The random cities I came up to are A, the city where someone we know lives, and B, a city you go to every year. Let me try this again. It's not like you're going to fly to Gary, Indiana to meet some jerk off the internet.
That's true. That's very true. That's never going to happen.
Okay.
God, that never happened.
We may, unless something amazing happens, we're going to retire her adventures in internet dating.
Yes.
And you can consider your guide to stalking the dive mistress essentially retired.
Oh, I'm sure everyone's sad to see it go.
But
what?
In other news, I'm just gonna plug the fact that Castle Vargelon is okay. I'm not doing anything in Castle Vargelon.
I'm posting every day
or every other day, so there's constantly new content, but it's not like I'm like, there's a new feature coming up. No, it's the stuff you always get. Comic book reviews, Criminal Minds reviews, CSI Miami reviews, and when I actually get around to watching a frigging movie, I'll review it, but there's 30 hours, there's 25 hours of being Erica to watch, okay? So that's a big sink on my time when I also have to have a writing thing done on Saturday.
Anyway, I have new content on Zombot, so you can stop by there, zombot.blogspot.com. You can read my review of Behind the Mask, and what else have we talked about? I don't review Dollhouse or Dexter on that site, so, but there are lots of other things to choose from, so do be sure to visit. You can send us an email at theavod@gmail.com, and you can visit the AVOD's blog at theavod.blogspot.com, and you can vote in our new poll.
Wait, tell them who won the last poll.
I was just going to say the last poll was I've forgotten the poll.
Most underrated.
Who was the most underrated horror villain? And the unanimous winner is Trevor Morehouse.
Not a surprise. Trevor Morehouse has a great look, fun personality, and he's starred in 2 movies. So, yeah, I get why people are digging on them some Trevor Morehouse action.
So the new poll for this week is which classic children's literature should be grittified, that is, made gritty.
I think they knew what that meant.
What's that?
I think they knew what that meant.
Well, I didn't when you said it the first time.
Okay.
But that's also because, you know, you've made it sound like a different word altogether.
Oh, shush.
So do be sure to stop by the blog and vote in the poll.
Okay. All right. I think that is really going to wrap things up for this week.
Going out to
all of our viewers.
Mm-hmm.
This is Count Vargelon.
And this is the Dive Mistress.
Have yourselves a good evening.
Good night.